If guilting yourself into being better with your money actually worked, wouldn't you be rich by now? Because let's be honest, most of us have tried that several times around. And what actually happens is burnout, not progress. So what we actually need is to drop the guilt, keep the joy, and still hit your financial goals. Welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee, supported by our friends at KiwiBank. I'm Frances Cook, an independent financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Now, here's the thing. Guilt, unfortunately, is a terrible motivator for long-term changes with our money. It fuels that little voice in your head that pipes up every time you want to spend money on something fun. Oh, really? Another coffee? Maybe you wouldn't be broke if you stayed home once in a while. You know, it's that one. That little voice. It's the inner financial killjoy. It's the one that tells you the only way to be good with money is to suffer, to sacrifice, to feel bad anytime you do something that brings you even a shred of joy. Now, most of us have listened and played this little shame game, so we know what actually happens next. It can work for a couple of weeks. We cut back hard for that week or two, maybe even a month, and we feel proud, virtuous, maybe even a little bit smug. But then we usually get sick of the sackcloth and go on to spend frivolously again with this feeling of just YOLO, can't be bothered, I'm feeling terrible about this all the time, and life is short. The spending snaps back, and we feel even worse than we did before. The secret, though, is that you actually don't have to choose between enjoying life and building a plan for the future. Trust me, it is entirely possible to quit the guilt without giving up on your goals. I've done it. I've helped so many other people do it. We can do this. You just need systems, some money psychology, and a smarter way forward than just beating yourself up constantly. So here's how you drop the guilt without dropping the goals. Making Sense is on a mission to make money simple, and I just couldn't do that without the support of KiwiBank. It's really important to me to only work with companies that understand that mission. And for KiwiBank, their purpose is to help Kiwi and Aotearoa be better off. So bringing you real stories of different approaches to finance is one of the ways they're making a difference to the lives of their customers. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. So here's why the guilt trap doesn't work. Guilt can trick us. It feels like a productive emotion. It feels like it's keeping you in check. But let me drop some research on you. From the American Psychological Association, guilt only works as a short-term motivator. And this is from several studies from this group. They've found over time that guilt actually decreases your ability to self-regulate. So why, when it feels like in that short-term moment it's helping, but long-term you're getting worse? How is that happening? Because it chips away at your self-esteem. And when you feel bad about yourself, you're less likely to make good decisions. So you'll end up stuck in a loop. It looks something like this. You overspend. You feel guilty. You vow you're gonna be better. You restrict yourself hard. You crack because you're only human. And then you overspend again. Oh, look, we're back to the guilt. And you're about to start over. It's the same pattern that plays out with diets. If you cut everything out, you will eventually find yourself face first in a tub of ice cream. Ask me how I know. Now, look, long-term listeners of the podcast will remember Dr. Brad Klontz. It was one of the most popular episodes we had tail end of last year, if you want to have a listen to that. But I had an episode with Dr. Klontz, and he is brilliant at pulling apart the money mindsets that both help us and the ones that can hold us back. He's done research into guilt and money, and he's not a fan. He puts it like this: shame causes paralysis. When we feel ashamed about our financial behavior, we tend to avoid our money. So, no checking statements, no opening bills, ignoring any problems, even if we can sense they're sneaking up on us, we just stop looking at it. And that just makes things 10 times worse. So, guilt, shame, whatever you want to call it, it will lie to you and tell you that it's helping, but it's not. So it's time for us to switch gears. We need to do something else instead so that you can feel good about your money and still hit those amazing goals. We're not dealing with this by saying we don't look at it entirely and everything's going to be fine. You can get all of those goals. We're just not going to be smacking ourselves over the head to get there. So step one, I want you to start by giving yourself the permission to enjoy life. Start with this radical idea that you are allowed to enjoy your money. Yes, even if you have debt. Yes, even if you're saving for something big, maybe a house, maybe something else, don't care. Yes, even if your income isn't where you want it to be yet, you can still enjoy your money. This is where intentional spending comes in. Many people think the goal of being good with money is to just never spend on anything fun ever again. And I can't tell you the number of people who've spotted me in a cafe and said, "Whoa, what are you doing here? You're the money lady." The money lady doesn't do those things. And here's the thing, I've been spotted quite often because I'm constantly in cafes. Yes, the money lady likes cafes. But cafe time is one of the things I've built into my budget because I enjoy it. I plotted out this video at a cafe. Actually, I got this coffee right here at a cafe, sipping on my favorite overpriced tea when I was there, and I got this coffee to bring home and enjoy when I was done. And actually, those who are just listening to the audio version won't be able to see this, but I'll describe it for you so you know. This coffee is such a good way of looking at intentional spending because it is an overpriced cafe coffee. Americano with cream, my friends. You haven't lived until you've had one. But it's in a keep cup that was free from a former employer. Because if I can get something for free, I'll do that too. And then I'll spend on the things I actually want. It is the perfect way of looking at your money. The tea I had as well while I was there. Tea is one of those areas where I've actually really had to work on myself because it's like $7 for hot water and leaves, right? Which is stupid. I know that's stupid. And I also have to break myself out of those guilt trips. I refused to let myself buy tea that I enjoy at a cafe for years because I was like, well, that's not worth it. But it's what I want. So actually it is worth it, isn't it? While I'm at that cafe, I bump into people I know from around the area. I live in a small town. I bump into people I know. It's brilliant. And then I have my little treat and I get out of the house, get some work done in an environment that I enjoy. I get way more work done because I'm enjoying myself and feeling happy. Spend happily on the things that you can afford and that bring you genuine happiness. Ruthlessly cut out the things that don't bring you happiness, that you can't afford, or you can find enjoyment at a cheaper price elsewhere. Good money management is about being intentional, not deprived. Now look, this might mean that you skip dinners out so that you can afford concert tickets. Or you might say no to online shopping and delete certain apps from your phone so that you can instead put that money towards a weekend away. You might not be able to afford everything at once. That's fine. But you can choose the things that you do want to afford and make those the priority. The key here is values-based budgeting. You decide what matters to you. And you spend on that, and then you cut out the other stuff. And research from the University of California has actually found this makes people more likely to stick to their financial plans. When those plans align with your actual personal values and what you want from your life. So you're not just asking, what should I cut? What you want to ask instead is, what's worth keeping? And how am I going to change things so that I can keep that? If you've paid your bills, made a little contribution to your savings, and you're on top of your goals, there is nothing irresponsible about spending on things that bring you joy. Whether it's a weekend away or a takeaway coffee, what matters is that you planned for it and it does genuinely bring you joy. Some people feel guilty for spending on non-essentials while they still have a mortgage or student debt or some sort of long-term goal that they haven't hit yet, that they shouldn't do anything else but that. But it is totally unrealistic to put your entire life on hold until everything is sorted. I mean, life is never sorted. That's just not how it works. So down that path, you have only got burnout and regret. You don't need to earn a certain income or reach a specific milestone in order to be allowed to enjoy your money. You just need to build it in from the start and make sure it's done in a way that fits your budget. Some of us have bigger budgets, some of us have smaller ones, but you've got to be strategic. You've got to know what matters to you and figure it out from there. Now, your next major money move is going to be using systems, not willpower. If you are relying on willpower alone to manage your money, it's no wonder that you're feeling like you're constantly falling short. Willpower runs out really quickly, especially when you're stressed or tired or overwhelmed. And let's be honest, most of us are hitting 2 out of 3 of those most days. Look, instead, you need to set up systems that make good money decisions happen automatically. The goal is to make those good financial choices once and then never have to think about them again. Now, this could mean all sorts of things. It could mean you set up an automatic payment into your savings right after each payday. So just go straight in there. Same thing for if you're investing, automate it. Make sure that it ticks over in the background while you are living your life. You could create a separate account for your bills so that you never accidentally spend what's supposed to be going to the power bill. You could switch to order groceries online so that you can easily reorder from previous lists and not be tempted by snacks at the counter. You could use a sinking fund to keep money set aside for those irregular expenses like car maintenance or birthdays so that you are prepared for when those things roll around, because there's always something and you've got a little stash there and it's not ruining your budget. Now, those are small tweaks, a lot of those, and they might sound boring, but they are so powerful. They are psychological tools, and you need to think of them that way and respect them that way, because let me bring in Nobel Prize-winning economist Richard Thaler. Now, he calls this choice architecture. That just means you're designing your environment so that the default option is the smart one. That smart thing that you want to do is what's happening automatically. If life happens, you still have the option to change things, but you will need to actively make the choice to step away from some of those long-term goals. And if that's the right thing to do, you can and you will. But you need to make it so that the automatic thing is the thing that you want. This choice architecture leads to dramatically better results with your money. It needs to be easy to make the right choice. Once the systems are in place, you don't even have to think about them. You're not trying harder. You're just setting up your life so that trying isn't even needed. Save the trying for the areas where you can't avoid it. This is how you beat money guilt. Not by being stricter, but by being smarter. Life looks different for everyone. Maybe you're buying your first home, growing your whānau, dreaming of travel, or simply trying to stay on top of things. KiwiBank has the tools to help you manage your money your way. Find out more at kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. Next, we're going to refocus your goals onto what you actually care about, because let's talk about how guilt sometimes shows up in disguise as goals that don't even belong to you. Because if you don't care, but you feel like you should, you are almost certainly going to fall off the wagon, and then you're going to feel bad about it. Maybe you're trying to buy a house because it feels like the adult thing to do, even though you actually secretly dream of doing the nomad life and remote work. Or maybe you feel bad that you're not investing aggressively when actually your top priority is paying off debt. That debt is stressing you out and you'd rather it be gone. Now, these goals aren't wrong. They're just not your goals. And you already suspect what your goals would be. You're ignoring them in favor of the should goals. If the goal doesn't match your values and what you want out of life, it will always feel like a struggle. And guilt will follow you every step of the way because you're not going to stick with them, because you don't want to, because it doesn't feel worth it. And then you fall off and you're going to beat yourself up for why couldn't you do this? Well, because you didn't want it. And that's fine. It's your one life. Let's do some things that you actually want. So take a moment to pause and ask, what do you actually want your money to do for you? Not your parents, not your friends, not your boss. What do you want your money to do for you? Do you want more time with your kids? Do you want less stress at work? Do you want the ability to take a career break and retrain, or to leave a toxic relationship? This is where you need to start. What do you want? Then work backwards so that your money supports that. Money isn't the end goal in itself. It's just a tool to help you build the life that you want to live. You start with the goal, the life, what you actually want, and then your money will help you build up to that. Next, I want you to acknowledge the wins, even the small ones, and maybe especially the small ones. This is a conversation that I actually had with someone just this morning. Half the battle with money is just showing up. Keeping an eye on your account, even in those times when you've made a mistake, still looking at the balance. You want to shut your eyes, pretend you didn't see it. No, you didn't. You checked, you saw where things were at, and you moved forwards. That's a win. Choosing to walk away from an impulse purchase that you don't even really want. That's a win. Shops and advertising were all set up to keep you there. Well done if you walk away. Setting up a $20 auto payment to savings because that's what you can afford right now, but it's still forward progress. These are wins. These are real, meaningful wins. And yet we tend to just ignore them and not celebrate them. Progress doesn't always look dramatic. We're often so focused on the big milestones. Buying a house, maxing out our KiwiSaver, hitting six figures, that we overlook the tiny habits that actually build wealth over time. But building the mental muscle to manage your money well is built out of these regular repetitions and small wins. It's just the same as a few squats each day will give you a fantastic booty. As long as you stick with it for a couple of months, we all know that you're not going to be ripped overnight, that you've got to put in the repetitions and stick with it. But for some reason with our money, we're looking for this silver bullet that doesn't exist. The financial world can make it feel like if you're not maxing out your investments or buying property by 30, you're behind. But that is not the real benchmark. You're building awareness within yourself. You are making better decisions. You are taking a step forward every time and setting things up so that your future self is in a stronger position. And every step forwards on that is worth it. Now, I have been constantly recommended Atomic Habits, and yes, I have finally read it. Yes, that is exactly what this tactic is. So if you want more on this type of thing, then go and read Atomic Habits. He puts it much better than I have here. Thank you to everyone who has commented and told me I would enjoy that book. I absolutely did. Look, Atomic Habits is brilliant at showing how these tiny, regular actions build up over time. It's not just the financial side of things, although yes, that is obviously important. We're here because we want to be doing better with our money, but it's also the emotional side of things and the identity. How you think of yourself can be changed with this. You will prove to yourself that you can do these things. You will take on the identity that you are a saver. Look, you're doing it, even if it's just $5. You are an investor, even if it's $10 a week right now. That change in how you think of yourself means you're much more likely to increase those amounts as you're able to. You're much more likely to go from $5 a week to $20 a week to whatever next than you are to go from $0 to really anything. You need momentum, and you need to think of yourself as someone who does these things. So it doesn't matter if it's small right now. What matters is that you do it. Prove to yourself that you can do it, however small it is. Then build it up over time. A small win, repeated often, becomes a big result. So do it and then celebrate it. Next, I really want you to be realistic about what's in your control. And this is really key for this money guilt, because money guilt loves us to ignore context and whisper in your ear that everything is all your fault. That if you were just smarter or more disciplined or worked harder, you wouldn't be in this position. And that can be a big lie. It is often a really big lie. Even if it's not a lie, it's not helpful. But let's focus on the 9 times out of 10 that it's a lie. Money guilt doesn't care that the cost of living is up, that you are earning the same, but insurance and groceries are costing you a small fortune, sometimes a large fortune. It just tells you instead over and over that you are doing it wrong. And it's so easy to blame yourself when things feel tight. Sure, there are some things we can do better, often. But sometimes as well, there are things out of our control, and that should be acknowledged, because it actually makes it easier for us to take control of the things we can, to acknowledge the things that we can't. So when those nasty little voices pipe up, I want you to take a moment and do this instead. I want you to step back and take stock. And you're going to ask yourself, what's in my control here and what's not? Be really, really honest with yourself. I'm not saying to use this as an excuse. I'm saying be realistic. What is within your influence here and what isn't? And then you control the things that you can. And you let go of the things that you can't, because those things aren't helpful. You can't stop inflation, but you can switch to a better grocery routine as much as possible. You can't change interest rates, but you can negotiate your mortgage or even other big bills like insurance. You can't undo a late start to investing. You can't have that time back, but you can start now. You can't force your boss to give you a raise, but you can at least ask for one and then upskill, job hunt, and start that side hustle that you've been quietly planning. Drop the guilt keep your agency. Because when you treat yourself well and you look at things with clear eyes, looking for the reality without the guilt, you are giving yourself so much more power. You can face your flaws, we've all got them, but you don't have to be crushed by them. Something goes wrong, don't spiral, problem solve. So here's another really important one. We're going to start using guilt as a signal and not a saboteur. Because what I don't need is for you to now start feeling guilty about feeling guilty. Wild, huh? Because that is another fun little spiral we can all get caught out on. Guilt is like a check engine light. It can tell you that something needs attention. And that's actually kind of useful. So you don't need to totally ignore it or smash the dashboard and keep driving, because that doesn't help us. What we're working through so far is actually ways to interrogate the guilt. We're asking it a few questions. We're using it to actually help us without letting it take over. Now that's the key bit. So a few questions when that guilty little voice pipes up. Is this guilt pointing to a real problem? Is this coming from someone else's expectations, not mine? Can I fix this with a small change instead of feeling like I have to panic and overhaul everything? So, say you feel guilty about getting takeaways too often. That doesn't mean you now need to cook everything from scratch for the rest of your life. It means maybe you take one or two nights of planned, budgeted takeaways so that the rest of the week is a bit easier. Or you do something like stock up on your favorite fakeaways in the freezer, which in my household, that's chicken tendies and chips. We've always got those. And it's actually quicker than takeaways a lot of times, but we've got them and we're ready. You are realistic about what's happening. And rather than just telling yourself off and saying you have to be this perfect version of yourself, beating yourself up over it, you build it in a way that works for you and your money. And this actually has a name. Thank you to the behavioral psychologists. It's strategic indulgence. And they've looked into this. It's really good at reducing all or nothing thinking, which tends to leave you with just nothing. When you get into all or nothing thinking, it just makes you feel like you're going to give up because you will never hit all. So you give up entirely. Have the strategic indulgence. Build it into your life. Do it the way that works for you. When you plan your splurges, you're so much less likely to restrict and then binge and cause more problems overall. It's okay to have a brief listen to the guilt, tune in and say, what's that nasty voice saying this time? But don't let it drive the car. And certainly don't let it tell you that you're doing everything wrong and you suck, because that simply doesn't help anyone. You can like yourself and still be nice to yourself while also making serious progress. In fact, I only started making progress once I started doing that. Guilt felt like it was helping me, but it was actually the number one thing holding me back. You have to move out of the shame and into strategy. You have to move out of punishment so that you can take back your power. And being good with money doesn't mean never buying coffee again. I promise you. I'm doing quite well these days. Thank you so much. And coffee is absolutely always in my budget. And so are several other little treats that I really enjoy. But what's not in there is other people's ideas of fun that I just don't care about, or other people's big goals that mean nothing to my life. Decide what life looks like for you and your version of success, not your parents, not Instagram. And then set the goals that will help you get there. The systems to make those goals happen with as little effort as possible. And if the guilt pops up from time to time, that's okay. Just don't beat yourself up over that either. Just a wee nod, thank you for your concern, little guilt fairy, and get back to living the life that you have chosen. Because you've got this. You're going to keep getting this. That's it for this episode of the Making Sense podcast. So make sure you hit subscribe wherever you're listening, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, wherever. And if it has been helpful to you, then also make sure you send it to a friend so we can all level up our money together. Until next time, though, have a great day and a guilt-free one.
Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.